This is Mornings with Kale in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. It's fun to stay at the
YMCA. It's fun to stay. Come on, you know you want to. You know, it was kind of fun yesterday. Don't know if you caught the last day of CPAC. I certainly did. Glued to it. I know that's a shocker. But it was kind of fun hearing one of former President Trump's signature campaign anthems yesterday as CPAC wrapped up. So you might be wondering as well, was it Trump Ultra, Trump Light, or Trump Zero at the final day of the Conservative Political Action Conference in Orlando, Florida? Well, here's a hint. CPAC should probably be renamed CPAT. That's how all in Trump they were. And yes, he's still fired up. Oh, yes. And he's still thinking about 2024. 608 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com, Northern Colorado's voice. Mornings with Gail via the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Yeah, didn't take long for Donald Trump to take aim at President Biden's early moves on everything from immigration to COVID-19, casting himself as the GOP standard bearer in the former president's first major public remarks since leaving office. By the way, he did win, no surprise here, the Conservative Political Action Conference straw poll on Sunday, with 55% of respondents saying they would vote for him in a hypothetical 2024 primary. Begging the question, would you? 21% said they'd vote for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. 4% said they would go with South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. Almost 7 in 10 of that straw poll's participants said they would like to see Trump run for president in 2024. Again, would you? Compared with 15% who said they would not. 17% who said, well, that's kind of a head-scratcher and I'm not really sure. 95% said they want the Republican Party to continue with Trump's agenda and policies. Only 3% saying that the GOP should change direction, and 2% just absolutely clueless. The CPAC straw poll also asked respondents who they would support for president in a theoretical race if Trump were not to be a candidate. The results showed DeSantis with a wide lead at 43% support. But meanwhile, former President Trump saying, we went through a journey like nobody else. There's never been a journey like it. There's never been a journey so successful. We began it together 4 years ago, and it's far from being over. This in the keynote address at CPAC yesterday. Let there be no doubt, we will be victorious. And yes, he did tease that he might run again in 2024 during his speech, repeating the claim. Yes, we're going to talk about election fraud, as he did yesterday, but repeating his claim that he did, in fact, win the November election. I might even decide to beat them, he said, for a third time. Incidentally, in case you've been living under a rock for quite some time, the GOP is without control of the White House, the Senate, and the House for the first time since 2010. Mr. Trump said he had decided, and there were some rumors, some speculation about whether he would start a new party. And it was a head-scratcher because, well, we all pretty well know how third parties tend to fare. He did come out and say yesterday at CPAC that he had decided not to start a new political party because we have the Republican Party, he said, noting that rumors to that effect that he was going to start a third party were nothing but fake news. Now, aides said that former President Trump might not reach a final decision on running in 2024 until after the 2022 midterm elections, in which he intends to play a key role hand-picking candidates and spanking those who voted to impeach him. I suppose it's more a matter of punishing those who voted to impeach him. For example, just this past Friday, Trump endorsed a challenger to Ohio Representative Anthony Gonzalez, one of the 10 House Republicans who sided with the Democrats. He also mentioned by name House Republicans who voted to impeach him and Senate Republicans who voted to convict him, including Senators Lisa Murkowski out of Alaska, Bill Cassidy, Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, mincing no words, saying, "Get rid of them all." President Trump said the rhinos that we're surrounded with will destroy the Republican Party. Oh, thanks to the Wall Street Journal referencing the term for Republicans in name only, because, you know, once again, we had no idea what a rhino is. Unfortunately, I'm afraid we know all too well. Now, he also criticized Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who he claimed would have lost his Senate reelection in 2020 without Trump's endorsement. But public opinion polls, and again, we take polls these days not with a grain but a pillar of salt, showed Mr. McConnell never trailed in that race. And, of course, the crowd briefly booed Mitch McConnell, who voted to acquit Trump in the impeachment trial, but did indeed rather vociferously denounce Mr. Trump's rhetoric ahead of the riot. And, well, those two have kind of been going at it tooth and nail ever since. Meanwhile, turning to President Biden, he slammed him over Biden's steps to basically cancel the Trump administration, to roll back his hardline immigration policies, as well as the administration's approach to school reopening, singling out President Biden's proposals in that broad immigration bill, such as creating an 8-year path to citizenship for the 11 or so million immigrants living in the country without permanent legal status. Trump likened that to amnesty and called for Republicans to oppose it. Trump also blamed the Biden administration for not more forcefully advocating for reopening schools, accusing President Biden of being beholden to teachers' unions, saying there's no reason whatsoever why the vast majority of young Americans should not be back in school immediately. The only reason that most parents do not have that choice is because Joe Biden sold out America's children to the teachers' unions. Now, the overall theme of CPAC this year was America Uncanceled. And, of course, President Trump, former President Trump, criticized what he views as the left's rather pernicious obsession with identity politics. He called for breaking up big tech, which he called monopolies, in order to lift and provide a counterculture canceling measure to conservative voices online. As you're well aware, Twitter banned former President Trump after the January 6th riot. He again repeated just yesterday those post-election claims, saying the election was rigged and calling for one election day rather than expanded voting by mail. Federal, state, local officials, you have to remember, have repeatedly said they saw no evidence of widespread election fraud. Remains to be seen, but unfortunately, it's not what you know in a court of law, it's what you can prove. Federal courts up to the Supreme Court ruled repeatedly against Trump-supported cases aimed at changing the result. Now, ahead of his speech, you had many people close to the former president saying he remains pretty darn ticked off about the result, but they were hopeful he would focus more on encouraging states to change election law. Interestingly enough, already a number of Republican-led states have begun to reverse changes made during the pandemic to facilitate more voting by mail. To further his own political goals, President Trump is not forming a new party, but no, a new super PAC. He already has a Save America Political Action Committee, which had raised more than $31 million by the end of 2020. Advisors say primary way for the former president to retain power is to play a winning role in the 2020 midterms. You had Senator Rick Scott, head of the Senate Republicans Campaign Committee, tasked with helping reelect the party's incumbent, saying it would be foolish to fan a civil war within the party over former President Trump. But is that a civil war already brewing? Mr. Scott said at CPAC, we will not win the future by trying to go back to where the Republican Party used to be. If we do, we will lose that working base that President Trump so animated. Now, for his part, former President Trump, at 74 years of age, he's been golfing most days and settling into post-presidency life at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. He looked pretty good yesterday. Did you happen to watch President Trump as he did the keynote address at CPAC? Looks rested, well-tended. Looks like he's lost a little bit of weight. He said he feels healthy enough for another campaign, should he choose to embark upon one. How does that make you feel? I know how it's making the Democrats feel. Probably not too happy because, well, they not only wanted to cancel him from his term as president, but also cancel him and prevent him from running for any future political office, which begs the question once again, is former President Trump, does he remain the future of the Republican Party? Interested in your thoughts this morning. 970-353-1310. You can also drop us a text on our 1310 KFKA text line. If you've been texting us for quite some time, well, you know the drill. And if you're thinking about joining our texting cohort, welcome on in. The water is fine. We have a brand new number for you, 970-478-1301. And all you have to do the first time you use that number is text KFKA to 970-478-1301. 619 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com. This time check brought to you by the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse, where Church Basement Ladies take center stage now through March 28th. A real don't miss fun, uplifting musical. Want more information? Just visit ColoradoCandlelight.com. Candlelight Dinner Playhouse in Johnstown, Broadway in your backyard.
What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. Think your bracket can win it all? Join the Hull Show's Bracket Challenge and hear the latest in hoops on 1310 KFKA.
Closing in on 626 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com, Northern Colorado's Voice. Mornings with Gail from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Well, some good news on the vaccine front. As expected, the Food and Drug Administration on Saturday approved the nation's third coronavirus vaccine. The official emergency use authorization for Johnson & Johnson's single-dose Fauci-ouchie comes after an agency advisory panel voted 22-0 to recommend authorization on Friday. What does that mean? Well, the Biden administration will now be able to start rolling out about 4 million doses of the vaccine to states, territories, federal agencies, and pharmacies. And once a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention panel meets and votes, which it did. By the way, vaccinations will be allowed to begin. Now, J&J's vaccine, needless to say, could be a potential game changer. Again, it is a single dose and does not need to be frozen at, well, very, very cold temperatures, calling for a whole lot of dry ice when shipped and stored. The FDA's announcement comes the same week. Sadly, the U.S. surpassed 500,000 COVID-19-related deaths, and as a decline in new cases across the country has stalled this amid that rise in more contagious variants of the virus. To date, and we've talked about this, supply has been the primary constraint to the ramping up of the vaccination effort. Of course, the J&J shot will help boost the nation's limited stores. Now, as you're well aware, a vaccine by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech and another by Moderna were both authorized back in December. Pfizer, for its part, has only shipped about 40 million doses, while Moderna has shipped about 45 million dosers. But both companies told Congress just this week that they are going to substantially increase their supply. Pfizer on track to deliver 120 million doses by the end of March, and a Moderna executive said the company will deliver 40 million doses a month by April. So good news as the FDA gives a green light to that Johnson & Johnson single dose COVID-19 vaccine. Tiger Woods, at the beginning of a very, very long road to recovery after he suffered those major leg injuries during that absolutely horrific rollover crash in California just last Tuesday. Many say that Woods is just lucky to have survived. You remember he underwent surgery for what doctors termed significant injuries to his right leg, and including compound fractures to the upper and lower portions of the tibia and the fibula. The surgeries included inserting a rod into the tibia as well as pins and screws into his ankle. Now, it's interesting because he was at the Genesis Invitational, also doing some TV work prior to this crash. In fact, that's where he was headed that fateful Tuesday morning to continue doing some production for Golf Digest, among others. But the big question then was, would he play in this year's Masters? Obviously, that's off the table with the extreme nature of his injuries. The real question now is, will he ever play again? Think about that for a minute. 25 years playing golf. What, 5 knee surgeries, 5 back surgeries, and now this? Brian McGuff is co-founder of Bricky Digital. This is a fairly unique sports management firm that works with pro athletes to help guide their personal and professional lives even after the apex of their sporting career has passed. Not saying that's the case, but I'm curious as to what advice Mr. McGuff would give Tiger Woods. Brian McGuff joins us this morning at 6:35. 6:30 now, 1310 KFKA.
It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. The Block Party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m. What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA.
Many of Tiger Woods' fellow golfers wearing his signature Sunday outfit yesterday, this during the final round of the WCG Workday Championship, prompting Tiger's first tweet since last Tuesday's horrific crash, in which he said, "It's hard to explain how touching today was when I turned on the TV and saw all the red shirts." Of course, referencing once again his signature Sunday outfit, a red shirt and black pants. To every golfer and every fan, You are truly helping me get through this tough time. Of course, the 15-time major champion and a 45-year-old is still recovering after surgery to fix the compound fractures in his legs suffered during that horrifying rollover accident last Tuesday in Southern California. And it remains unclear whether Woods will be able to continue his golf career. What next for Tiger Woods? 638 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com. Northern Colorado's Voice, Mornings with Gail, via the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Joined this morning by Brian McGough. He is co-founder of Bricky Digital. This is a sports management firm that works with pro athletes to help them guide not only their professional but their personal lives, even after their sports career has ended. Not saying that indeed is the case. Oh, Tiger Woods is a tenacious one now, isn't he? But what if it is? Brian, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Gail. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Thank you so much. So as you reflect on Tiger Woods' stellar career. I mean, you want to talk about a GOAT? Yeah, that would be Tiger Woods. I believe he is truly one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all times when it comes to golf. But as a result of this crash and all of the other physical maladies that he has suffered over a 25-year career, what, he's had five back surgeries, five leg knee surgeries. He's no stranger to pain. He's no stranger to overcoming the challenges of rehab. But what is your take on all this now, where Tiger stands?
You know, I think it's interesting. Like you said, he's certainly no stranger to pain. If you look at his track record from 2005 to 2017, actually a handful of his major wins, almost half of them came when he was in pain. He was going through surgeries or some kind of chronic pain about every year from 2005 to 2017. So he's definitely no stranger to it. But I know this injury is much more complex. It was dealing with the ankle and leg. Obviously, when you're dealing with pivoting and turning, there's a lot more things going on. And then also mentally, you know, that's going to be another big piece for Tiger. And he's also no stranger to mentally getting back and preparing the game. But I think this one's holding a lot of weight. There's a lot of people that are going to be interested in watching the narrative through this whole way through and to see if Tiger really wants to get out back out there and finish the game on his own terms the way he'd like to get it done.
Well, mental toughness, I think, is a certainly part. If you, like me, are a hacker slasher, you're probably a much better golfer than I am, but that's part and parcel, right, of the game of golf. And just to watch him, I remember seeing the old video when he was just 2 years of age, and now it looks as though his son Charlie, all of 11 years old, is kind of a mini-me following in his footsteps. But when it comes to mental toughness, second to none when you're talking about Tiger Woods. But is this going to be the proverbial straw?
You know, I personally, my opinion is I don't think so. I think Tiger comes back. I think it may take a while. I think that, you know, I know the initial reports are saying 6 months to a year, but I think he has the wherewithal mentally. I think, you know, he's shown us that he can play through pain. He can play through injury. He can do it physically. I don't think he wants to leave it on the table this way. I think he's very close to smashing a few more records. And I think in a very Tiger-esque way, he's going to come back here. He's going to have the whole nation, the whole country behind him. And I think it may take some time, but I feel like he's going to get back and finish the job.
Now, as you're well aware, as you're the co-founder of Bricky Digital, and I'm fascinated by the nature of your sports management firm because you work with pro athletes throughout their careers, but also help guide them, perhaps prepare them for what happens after they're out of that proverbial limelight. And I can't help but wonder, I mean, it's tough enough when you look back on a great career and realize, well, perhaps I've got to find something else to occupy my passion, my drive to compete. But when your career is potentially cut short by an injury, well, that's a whole game changer, isn't it? It's a whole other set of psychological issues that you need to deal with.
It definitely is, yeah, and it's exactly what you said. It's psychological, and it's tough for a lot of players. You know, this is nothing new. A lot of players go through this every year. You know, you never know when an injury is going to pop up. You never know when you're going to get cut from a team. There's all sorts of scenarios that could play out, but it leaves a lot on the table, and that's why we see a lot of, you know, mental illness and a lot of things going on with players outside of sports. So it's very critical. It's very important that players have a plan and some sort of identity, a roadmap as to what they're going to do, and have those safeguards in place just in case something does happen, because it does. And it's important to be set up mentally and physically and have a game plan for the future and what you're going to do for your life after sports.
You know, I talk frequently with Dr. Andy Feinstein. He is president of the University of Northern Colorado, and we talk quite a bit about the student athlete, that it is important that they not only excel on the field, but also as students, which I think plays into exactly what you're talking about in coming up with a game plan, because unfortunately, well, our bodies grow old and we grow tired. As you said, you never know if you're going to get cut or you're going to suffer an injury, or whatever the case may be. We never know what life is going to throw our way. So it's important to start making that plan post-athletic career as early as possible, isn't it?
It sure is. And, you know, that's what we advocate. We advocate education and literacy and teaching it early. So we get with a lot of our players as soon as college, high school, to start educating and just informing. You know, there's so much more you can do with information. Once you have information, you can start to make effective and informed decisions. So that's what we do with our players, try to educate from an early age, plant the seed so they're able to make those effective decisions, not only through their career, but after their career as well.
I have to wonder, given all of the ups and downs of his professional career, yes, I am the mistress of understatement. I mean, not questioning his prowess, certainly on the golf course. But let's just say that from a mental standpoint, the rigors, the stress of playing at such an elite level certainly have taken somewhat of a toll. So watched him in December with his son Charlie, 11, 12 years of age, and watching Charlie play with Tiger and displaying some of the same just not only golf skills, but his basic reserve on the course. I have to wonder if Tiger Woods ever thought about, am I taking my son down this path of, yes, success and achievement, but also of, well, some pretty high stress?
Certainly, yeah. I'm sure it's crossed his mind. You know, and watching the documentary, I've watched it a handful of times now, actually, and just watching a little bit more about Tiger's childhood. And, you know, I know we've all read the articles before in the past, but I'm sure that certainly crossed his mind. As, you know, although it's come with a lot of fame and a lot of fortune, there has been a lot of downside and a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, a lot of family issues. So I think that's definitely something he keeps in mind. I think at the end of the day, Tiger's a, you know, a good dad and keeps all that kind of stuff in mind. But, you know, as a father myself, it's definitely something that would be eye-opening to you too. You know, open one door to maybe close another one. So I'm sure it's definitely something he has his eye on.
Should Tiger's golf course career be over, at least in terms of playing the course, where would you see him going from here, just based on what you know about his passion for the game and his drive?
I definitely don't see him stepping away from the game 100%. I think he'll remain in the game somehow. You know, he's very, very philanthropic. I know he's always giving back into the community, to youth athletics. So no matter where his place is, on or off the course, I think that he's done so much to change the game. He's done so much for the name of golf that he'll be a presence for a lifetime, no matter where it's on or off the course.
Well, we certainly hope him a speedy and complete recovery. Brian McGough is co-founder of Bricky Digital Sports Management Firm. Tell us a little bit more about the firm.
Yeah, so we, exactly what you said, we help athletes not only transition inside of sports, but outside of sports as well. And one of the big areas that we solve is, you know, the stats say up to 80% of players can go broke within 2 to 3 years. after exiting pro sports. So when we got our firm together, we really got out to solve a problem in the marketplace. And the reason why athletes are going broke isn't typically because the money coming in, people are making millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's the money going out and monitoring the spending patterns and the behavior and checking the transactions. So we can track the transactions to the T where people are spending their money every month. So how, where, and what they spend their money, we can track and build a custom budget to keep them on track. But also we work on the other side to build their credibility as a person outside of the sports that they play. So it's really important to maximize these few years during sports and take that and build their credibility as a person. So when they're done with sports, they have something to rely on, a name, an image, a likeness, other than the sport that they played, to build themselves up as a person, whether it's a business or a foundation or doing something to give back into their community, but really build that person up. So like we talked about, that transition is a little easier. They have something to rely on, a name to stand on.
Yeah, financial literacy, especially important to those who, well, have a limited time, given the nature of our bodies and the nature of sport, in which to make a whole lot of dough. Brian McGough, co-founder of Bricky Digital. Where can we learn more about Bricky Digital?
You can go to BrickyDigital.com.
Thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate your insights.
Thank you, Gil. Take care. Have a great morning.
You too. 648 now, 1310 KFKA.
Want the whole sports story in Northern Colorado, the state, and the country? Tune into The Hull Show, weekdays noon to 2 and 1310 KFKA. More local talk coming up next with NOCO Now in Northern Colorado's voice, 1310 KFKA.
So again, good news on the COVID-19 vaccine front. This as the FDA gave the green light to that Johnson & Johnson single-dose vaccine. Shipments, distribution expected to begin as early as this week. 6:52 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com. Northern Colorado's Voice, Mornings with Gail, via the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. All right, so what do you need to know about this J&J vaccine? What's different about it? Well, according to a piece out of AP and McClatchy, the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines are made using something called messenger DNA. This is a technology that says, hello, and gives instructions for making a harmless piece of what is called that spike protein, which is found on the surface of the virus that in turn causes COVID-19. Now, the vaccine by Janssen BioNTech, owned by Johnson & Johnson, uses a different approach for delivering the genetic instructions for creating that coronavirus spike protein. It uses an inactivated virus, which is a common virus that can cause, well, any given range of diseases from colds to pink eye. And while the use of weakened or killed viruses for vaccines is not new, well, there haven't been other vaccines of this nature approved by public health authorities for people. But clinical trials are now underway for these vaccines for HIV, Ebola, Zika, and malaria, among other diseases. So the advantages of this new J&J vaccine, well, obvious at first glance. The vaccine requires only a single dose as opposed to the Moderna and Pfizer BioNTech vaccines, which both require two doses. The J&J vaccine can become protective as early as 14 days after it is given. It can also be stored in refrigerators for at least 3 months, while the mRNA vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines, require much colder storage. Well, obviously, that makes the vaccine easier to distribute, particularly in rural areas, and also easier to administer. How effective is it? Well, a review by the Food and Drug Administration found that it is highly effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths 28 days after immunization. Studies conducted in the U.S., South Africa, and Central and South America showed it to be less effective, though, than the mRNA vaccines at preventing moderate illness, with an efficacy rate of 66% overall. That's likely due, at least in part, to a decrease in effectiveness against the variant first found in South Africa. Company's trials showed it 72% effective in the nation against moderate to severe COVID-19. Is it safe? Yeah, it is. FDA found no specific safety concerns with the vaccine. Among the study participants, most common side effects were soreness at the injection site, headaches, fatigue, and muscle pain. All that said, these side effects were generally mild to moderate and more common in those ages 18 to 59 than to older participants in the trials. Now, emergency use authorization of the vaccine means that the FDA considers that the benefits from the vaccine outweigh any risks. So how many doses will J&J supply? Well, the company says it'll have 4 million doses available to ship immediately. Although earlier it pledged to have 10 million available by the end of February. Can you believe it's already March? Company officials now say they can have 20 million doses available to the government by the end of March, and the government has agreed to buy 100 million doses of the vaccine by June. Again, the J&J vaccine could arrive as early as this week. 657 now, 1310 KFKA.
Hear Mornings with Gail, weekdays 6 to 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 1310 KFKA. We have the games. Go to 1310KFK.com to see our preps, college, and pro game schedules on Northern Colorado's Voice. 1310 KFKA.
And we thought it was just the oil and gas wars. Silly us. Rachel Gable writing in the Fence Post, 3 weeks after Colorado Governor Jared Polis called agriculture the cornerstone to the foundation of our state in an open letter aimed at preserving the National Western Stock Show's future in Colorado. Well, he signed a proclamation promoting a meatless day. Yes, don't eat anything but plant-based foods on March 20th. Because it's meat out day. Yes, and the removal of animal products from our diets. Sherry Pipe, Weld County political insider, investigative journalist, Complete Colorado, weighs in at 7:05.